Chairman Stephen Mayne, small shareholder. You've talked about a write-down of intangibles. Now, intangibles on the balance sheet are 330 million, total equity is 340 million. So clearly intangibles are 97% of our claimed net assets and equity. Market cap's about 150. So there's probably 180 million, which the market is saying isn't there. Is that giving us a bit of a picture as to what we're looking at in terms of the write-down?
Thank you for your question, Stephen. Just as background for all shareholders, I might give some comment about where the intangibles come from. As a result of the unstapling in August 2006, EDB acquired some specific revenue streams from Everest Capital Limited. These revenue streams relate to fees associated with the management of specific funds. A reduction in AUM from those acquired funds, regardless or not of whether or not you raise the funds under the new trust, may lead to a write-down of the intangibles. Should EDB write down these assets, it would be a non-cash accounting entry and does not impact the investment or general operation activities of the company. It would, however, impact the profits of the company and our ability to pay a dividend in 2008. We're investigating, management that is, the possibility, or the ability of the company to pay a return of capital in the absence of the dividend. Obviously, any decision to make a return of capital will first need shareholder and board approval. To answer your question more specifically, Stephen, the answer to your question is no, because there is considerable value in the revenue streams that were acquired, and the quantum of any write-down would be dependent on the A level. So your figures are widely in excess of any number that the board would be considering.
Okay. Now, would we have done better in terms of our performance if we hadn't co-invested in some Babcock vehicles?
To be clear, the nature of the co-investments are in direct assets that are sourced from Babcock and Brown. And there is a very small allocation to two Babcock vehicles. That allocation is through EBI, it's not through EBI.
And which vehicles are they?
One is a Babcock and Brown vehicle.
What about the hospital PPP? Is that Babcock?
That is a direct investment, which we referred to in yesterday's EBI meeting. One of those investments has been fully repaid that relates to Orange Hospital, and there is another investment relating to the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne, which is a performing asset. I'm very comfortable with that investment. Again, that investment was made through EBI.
Now, on March 25, the Herald Sun reported the headline, Children's Hospital Builders Finances Under Cloud. The first paragraph said, the state government faces a possible $1 billion bailout of the new Royal Children's Hospital after a cloud was cast over the project's finances. Now, can you give us some further information on how large our exposure is? You've described it as performing. What about recoverable or saleable at book value or other things like that? Could you get out of it without taking a haircut?
The answer is yes, and in fact there is. We have an understanding that Brown, who are the originator of this particular asset, that they will be repaying that loan that we have to Children's Hospital in Melbourne, I think quite shortly.
I'm happy to comment. The comments in the press related to the downgrading of the insurance wrap around the debt. There's absolutely no significance to the underlying project. It's an issue for long-term bondholders. Structured PPP effectively state government credit. Everest sits in that capital structure as a lender, and the process in train at the moment, but we would expect to
And what's the size of the figure?
Stephen, I think it's important to emphasise, I'm sure you're aware that maybe other members are like, this is only EVB investment. So whilst it's no doubt interesting and very complex, it is something which doesn't affect EVB's balance sheet. And therefore the appropriate time to have a discussion with them yesterday at EVB.
But I guess isn't the point that if EBI doesn't perform, funds will leave, our fees will be lower. So, I mean, they're one and the same, aren't they? If EBI makes a bad investment that we're in control of, we suffer the resulting poor performance and funds outflow. Isn't that correct?
EBI is listed, so you can only buy and sell shares. Nonetheless, there are performance fees that are raised to EBI, just pointing some of the non-performance fees payable. So the other topic.
But suffice to say, we're very confident at the EBB level and the EBI level that this investment is fully performing and is soon to be taken out. In fact, there are discussions underway by another back on the ground here. So if it doesn't perform, a lot of times we need to talk about why that works.
Well, can I have a comment about the broader Babcock's relationship? You've seen issues with Babcock & Brown infrastructure, lending money to Babcock & Brown, the parent company, a couple of hundred million unsecured at 8%. Would it be better for us if we severed the relationship, if we were independent? Do you think that our trading, our share price, is being infected by sentiment around things that are happening at Babcock & Brown Power and the perceptions of related party transactions? And I mean, I was surprised to see that you're lending money on a Babcock's originated PPP on a big hospital deal in Melbourne. And then there's press reports it's not performing, and now you're saying it's going to be juggled off to another Babcock vehicle. Just brings us into the broader, bigger Babcock picture. As independent directors of this vehicle, do you think maybe that given current sentiment that a separation and a rebranding might perhaps be the way to go?
Let me take a couple of the points that you made. First of all, Babcock & Brown being a very supportive shareholder, we're very happy with the relationship with Babcock & Brown. Secondly, in relation to how the investment committee works, which perhaps addresses part of the question about how transactions happen between Babcock & Brown and Everest Babcock & Brown and Everest Babcock & Brown Total Investments Trust. We have a separate investment committee within EBB, which is control, which is management of EBB, together with one representative from Babcock & Brown. The Babcock & Brown representative on that investment committee does not vote on any Babcock & Brown investment. So only the independent management of EBB, mainly Jeremy and myself, and John Peterson, the chief investment officer on the investment committee, can make the unanimous decision as to whether or not we choose to invest in a Babcock & Brown sourced investment. We have turned many of the Babcock & Brown investments that have been offered to us down. It's important for shareholders to know that. The investments that we have taken from Babcock & Brown have been successful and producing good returns for investors, mainly through EBI and secondly one of the two direct investment vehicles, the Everest Babcock & Brown Income Fund, the Everest Babcock & Brown Opportunities Fund. So the other part of the question is more positive one. Would we be better off in a separate relationship because of perceived reputational risk or brand damage? The answer is no. They're a very supportive shareholder offering us very good opportunities, and we're happy with the relationship. Probably said much else.
Just one question. Kerry's an independent director, is also the independent chairman of Babcock & Brown Capital. So there are two Babcock associations, both as independent. I'm wondering if he can explain the history of his relationship with the broader Babcock group and exactly the process by which he was selected to be an independent director of this board.
History part of your question, although I can say at the outset, Kerry is a very valuable director and very good terms of Kerry's history with
Well, I'm just asking for Kerry, if Kerry can inform the meeting about the full history of his relationship with Babcock.
Yes, thank you. There, my first connection with or meeting with Babcock and Brown was probably in the early 90s when Bill Green came to the Hong Kong Bank to consider floating Prime Credit Property Trust. We achieved that initial public offering for Babcock and Brown successfully, and I had no further dealings or connection from, I guess it would have been around 1994. I had no further connection with Babcock and Brown until I was approached and invited to join the Edwards Babcock and Brown board. I don't know what criteria were applied by Edwards Babcock and Brown in determining to make that invitation. Hearing the reason his colleagues about that.
Was it a personal approach or through a headhunter?
Can I also say the manner of selection of board members from company to company differs, but headhunters are probably used in a minority of cases, and often it is the perception of experience and skills of the director, their independence of mind, their ability to make a contribution that is more relevant than Kerry was appointed a director of EBB in its first version of the Linux Stable Security more than 3 years ago, so I think we probably
and then finally, I did not take that chair in that company round, and I was never invited to take chairs in that company. I have no office with that company round. I attend their offices for board meetings or for other meetings that relate to that company round capital.
Thank you. Just a couple of points, Chairman. Babcock's have got 71 million shares in EBB, or 28%. I'm just interested to hear from Phil as to the cost of acquisition, whether there's any leverage associated with it, whether the shares have been pledged in any way as part of the broader financial management of the broader Babcock's empire, and whether he can categorically say that Babcock's is comfortable and intends to sit where it is and stay as a long-term anchor, cornerstone shareholder in EBB.
Stephen, a couple of your questions are really appropriate for EBB,
Saves asking him tomorrow. If you answer it now, I won't. Fair deal.
Just in the interest of time tomorrow.
Yeah. Chairman, just a similar one to Kerry. I think we've actually done quite well to get Kerry and Michael to this board if you look at the size of our business and the quality of their CVs. Michael ran institutional banking at the CBA, you know, a bigger job in banking, there aren't too many. I'm just curious if he can also elaborate on his connection in terms of Babcock. I know he was in charge of high net worth banking at CBA. Was he banker to the Babcock boys when he ran CBA?
Well, before I invite Mr. Katz to address the meeting, can I say that I've known Michael Katz for a very long time, and I have the highest regard for him. He's somebody who also had a very senior position at Morgan Stanley in Geneva and Tokyo. He's been involved in the past issues of banking and finance for many, many years. Including senior roles being involved with CompSec, establishing CompSec as Australia's largest online brokerage business. So at the board level, we welcome his participation, his involvement in the risk management part of the operations, and involvement on both the audit and risk committee and remuneration and subcommittee as a board. In regard to his connections with Babcock & Brown, I'm not aware of any particular role. I'd invite Mr. Katz to say that himself.
Just one quick one, Chairman. I'd like to commiserate with Jeremy for being becoming the youngest ever person to fall off the rich list, which he's done today, age 31, down from 200 to 65. So commiserations. We've all obviously taken a fair haircut in EBB stock as well over the past year, and I'm just interested in whether we're going to see a reduction in the published figures in terms of the management pay when we go into this loss and cut to the dividend that we're likely going to see.
Well, my consideration is also to Mr. Reid that if numbers in the RW committee, I think are historically pretty inaccurate, but suffice to say he's perfectly aligned in terms of the shareholding of the EBB of all of us as shareholders. In regard to management remuneration in 2008 year, it's too early for us to make any comments. It's still 7 months to go. I can say that the options that relate to staff are out of the money. So reported remuneration is sometimes an accounting juggle, and I would emphasise that the reported figures in regard to the options are probably irrelevant in the context of the money. In terms of performance-based remuneration that relates to bonuses, we have at Everest a very strict policy in terms of paying out performance-based remuneration out of performance fees. Having said that, performance fees will be under pressure this year, and I'm referring specifically to the first half. The second half is still before us. Again, we would